Hey, Hardwood Knox listeners, if you're like me, you can be overwhelmed by the sheer amount of content that is available to you on a daily basis. What is worth reading? What's not reading? How do you keep up with your favorite team, your favorite league? It's all so overwhelming sometimes. Axios Sports has a solution. They're a free, curated daily newsletter that will send you the best stories from the NBA and NFL to cricket and ping pong and everything in between. You can set up your free account at sports.axios.com and get this content that you want, that you need, delivered directly to your email inbox each and every day. What are you waiting for? Sports.axios.com. Sign up for free. Again, sports.axios.com. Hey yo, Hardwood Knox listeners, I am Dan Favalli coming at you with my super duper, incredibly esteemed, awesome times awesome, fantabulous, spectaculario, lives in a place where there is snow in October and he friggin' loves it, co-host Andrew D. Bailey. Before we get started with the rest of our Northwest Division preview featuring the Timberwolves, Blazers, and Denver Nuggets, you can also check out part one where we did the Jazz and the Oklahoma City Thunder. Just our usual housekeeping notes slash please. The first one, as always, continue rating, reviewing, and subscribing to Hardwood Knox on iTunes. Pretty please. We love seeing the ratings numbers go up. We've seen some great reviews written in the past couple weeks. Keep those coming. 5-star ratings only. Come on. You can leave feedback in the comment section. Stuff you don't like, stuff you love, stuff you want to hear more of. Guest suggestions. We're always open to hearing those. You can also find us wherever else you get your podcasts. But iTunes is still the best way to let us know that you're out there and you are listening. If you have subscribed, which is definitely the most important thing, please, any recommendation type actions you can give us is appreciated. The easiest one, just retweet us when we're promoting the podcast. Help us get the word out there, or you can give us shout outs yourself, or you can steal people's phones and subscribe them to the Hardwood Knox podcast and know that they'll thank you later. Follow Hardwood Knox on Twitter at Hardwood Knox. Then follow Andy on Twitter at Andrew D. Bailey. You can follow me on Twitter at Dan Favalli. That's F-A-V-A-L-E. And last but certainly not least, you can follow Blue Wire on Twitter at Blue Wire Pods. I help run the social media accounts there, so you can check out all my fire tweets in addition to giving a look-see to one of our many, many strong podcasts that are on the network. And with that all out of the way, we get to the question that everyone is always dying to know the answer to. Andy, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. I picked up no lies in that intro. I had a hard time finding which word to use, and I'm not sure I found it. Because I really do like the snow. My wife disagrees with me, but I love liked your heat. Wife. So. So yeah, I'm ready and raring to go. I had to scrape some ice and snow off my windshield, but here we are, ready to do this.
Before we get into the teams, we have another edition of Swole or Troll, which we have neglected over the past couple of weeks because we've been pumping out season preview content with guests, and I don't want to subject them to Swole or Troll as awesome as it is. We have a couple responses in addition to some of my own that I'm throwing in there. Whenever we solicit these Swole or Troll candidates, please, come on, throw us some suggestions. We like hearing from you. You're great with the mailbags. Maybe try and be a little bit better with this, if you could. Pretty please, again. The first one comes from one of our most loyal listeners, Miroslav at MCUKMF. Nuggets versus Jazz in the Western Conference Finals, Swole or Troll?
Ooh, I'm going to say Swole. I like it.
Yeah, I don't know why that's a troll. Those are two of the better teams on paper in the Western Conference.
Yeah, the thing about trying to figure out what the Western Conference Finals is going to be is that you could legitimately pick like six different teams, maybe even more. I don't know. We've had this conversation many, many times in the last few months, but it's not just Warriors versus everyone else anymore. It's wide open.
This is kind of akin to saying that these two teams will be two of the top three seeds in the West then, basically. I mean, I know there could be other seeds and there are upsets, but that might be the most effective path to them meeting in the Western. And even that, if you tethered it to such a finite outcome, I still don't think that that's a troll job.
Yeah, I don't think that's a troll at all.
This one I love from at Comrade Novoselli, C-O-M-R-A-D-E-N-O-V-O-S-E-L-I. Coach Bud's beard, swole or troll?
Beards are always swole.
I want to say troll because I can't grow a beard, but I'm inclined to agree with you. So
mine's not real great either, to be honest. But I loathe shaving. So I'm all for the beards.
I grow like a checkerboard on my face. They're like these patches that just grow really dark hair. And then the rest of it is just skin or blondies, whatever you want to call it. So if I really let it grow out, I'm going to look like a chess or checkerboard or something.
Mine's good if it's like a week old. Much beyond that is problematic.
This one's from me. But Rich Paul, I don't know if you read Dave McMenamin's piece at ESPN.com about going inside the Anthony Davis trade and then subsequently listen to the Low Post podcast. Rich Paul effectively said if Anthony Davis was on the Bucks, they would have made it out of the Eastern Conference last year, and that was the difference between Anthony Davis and Giannis Antetokounmpo. Dave McMenamin told Zach Lowe that this comment came fairly unsolicited. It wasn't like he asked him, oh, is Anthony Davis better than Giannis Antetokounmpo? Swole or troll?
Troll. Yeah, I don't – he's got to say what he's got to say for his client. I get it. He's an agent. But Giannis is clearly better to me. Anthony Davis is incredible, and especially like the way he was playing before the trade request, he was phenomenal. But I don't think – to me, it actually is pretty clearly Giannis. I know some people might push back on that a little bit. Maybe Davis is a better shooter, but I think Giannis is quite easily better. And I think there's a pretty easy argument that he is more of a make-your-teammates-better kind of a guy than Anthony Davis is, which is, I think, the gist of what Rich Paul was saying. So that one's a troll for me. Maybe not in Rich Paul's mind, but it's certainly I'm not with it.
Yeah, I'm just going to say that if you put Giannis Antetokounmpo on last year's Pelicans, they're a postseason team. That would be
– yeah.
I'd be more inclined to go that way. And that's not disrespect to Anthony Davis, who's a top seven player right now, and there's an easy case that he's – top five. They were advanced. The catch-all metrics effectively said he was like the second best player in the NBA for a really long time last season. Giannis Antetokounmpo is better. My other takeaway from this is that I guess Rich Paul isn't concerned about ever potentially trying to sign Antetokounmpo, whose reps are from Octagon Basketball right now. I guess that's not really a thought in his mind. I know you have to go to bat for your client, but I thought one of the other rules was don't kind of rankle potential future clients, but just me. This is another Antetokounmpo-related swole or troll, and it's twofold. The NBA fining the Bucks. This is going a while back, both of these, for talking about offering Giannis a supermax after this season. And then the NBA subsequently posting a picture on Twitter of Tanasis Antetokounmpo in his Lakers jersey, but they only photographed the back, where it just said Antetokounmpo, and you could see it in the Lakers jersey. Swole or troll?
Troll. That's an easy one.
That's like a little bit of a flex, though, too. Just because it's like to go and find the Bucks, but then to post that picture. Oh, it's not. Why am I screwing it up? It's not Tanasis that was on the
list. Kostas.
Yeah, sorry. Excuse me. I think I just like saying Tanasis. I'm just gonna be upfront about you. So
he'll always be a Nick to you.
Yeah, that's why. I'm gonna go with a flex. It's a troll to find the Bucks, but then it's really just a flex to post that picture in the way that they did.
I'm sticking with troll all the way on this one.
All right. Well, that'll do it for this edition of Swole or Troll. It'll be back next week, probably, hopefully, most definitely, maybe, who knows. Following a team you love in 2019 can be time-consuming. Trying to follow everything happening in sports is almost impossible. Scrolling through every app and visiting every website on a daily basis is impossible. That's why I subscribe to Axios Sports, the best free daily newsletter in the land. Axios Sports is a modern sports page delivered directly to your email inbox. When you sign up for free at sports.axios.com, you'll get the best stories from the NBA and NFL to cricket and ping pong and everything in between. Axios Sports also highlights the most important stats and trends, giving you the ability to stay informed. It's super simple to sign up, and again, it's free. Who doesn't love free? Sports.axios.com. Not only will you be caught up, you'll be the friend sharing an amazing link with your buddies. Join the 100,000 sports fans who get caught up on the day before it even begins. And best of all, there's no paywall, no subscription fee, absolutely nothing. This is free, curated sports content delivered directly to you. Sign up at sports.axios.com. Again, try for free at sports.axios.com. On to the rest of the Northwest Division. We're going to wrap up by going in reverse winning percentage order, which makes us start with the Minnesota Timberwolves, who were 36 and 46 last year, dealt with some, I guess you'd call it turmoil, or had a case of the tour de forces at the beginning of the year. Some notable additions for them: Jake Layman, Jared Culver, Jordan Bell, Noah Vonleh, Shabazz Napier, Travion Graham, Tyrone Wallace. Notable exits: Anthony Tolliver, Cameron Reynolds, Dario Saric, Derek Rose, Luol Deng, Taj Gibson, and Tyus Jones. Andy, we're changing this to basically Fast Five or Sexy Six, where we're just going to alternate instead of overloading the listeners with all our different takeaways and observations about this team, hopefully to move this along quicker as well. What do you have for the Timberwolves to start?
First of all, I love that you said a case of the tour de forces. I forgot about that tweet. A lot of Minnesota players left Timberwolves practice today energized by Butler's performance, mesmerized with him taking end of the bench players and running the table on the regular, sources said. At the end, he marched out like if a mic drop. I don't know if that's some sort of typo. Butler delivered a tour de force. Adrian Wojnarowski's weird sentence structure at the end killed my dramatic delivery there, but that tweet is amazing. My first question is Andrew Wiggins done? Like, is he a finished product, or are we going to get something different out of him this season? There's been some talk this summer from Ryan Saunders about trying to revamp his shot profile, and maybe that helps him a little bit. Maybe he becomes more of a playmaker. But I think there's reason for concern whether any of that will actually happen, because we're entering year six, and there hasn't been a ton of development from year one to year six, or year one to year five. His rookie season, he averaged 17 points, 4.5 rebounds, 2 assists. His fifth year, the one that we just finished, the one where he particularly had a case of the tour de forces, he averaged 18 points, just under 5 rebounds, 2.5 assists. His numbers have been pretty much the same for 5 years. So I'm just wondering if there's some other notch or level that we're going to see from Andrew Wiggins.
Yeah, that would be one of mine. I won't use it because you did, obviously. It does seem maybe he'll have more opportunity just because Jimmy Butler's gone, Derrick Rose is gone. What type of responsibility, though, is he going to be saddled with, really? And the offense is going to run through Karl-Anthony Towns, as it should, but you do also have Jeff Teague on this roster, not the most ball-dominant point guard. Are you going to give Wiggins a chance to kind of really run point forward? This ties into one of my questions about this team, is I want to see what Jared Culver's role looks like. And I think that's going to be directly impacted by how much faith or volume the Timberwolves are going to entrust with Andrew Wiggins. I'd like to see Culver kind of run some point forward or point wing. There were a lot of questions about him leading into the draft. Is he going to have the explosion to create separation against NBA defenses? And I just think when you look at the type of defender that he can be, just sort of a sturdy 6'7", and the fact that he did work on the ball a good amount in college, I really would like to see him get that opportunity. And Wiggins definitively cuts into that. You almost have to give Wiggins that opportunity because of what you're paying him over the next few years. Mm-hmm. It would be cool maybe to see a lineup where you go without a point guard and run with Culver and Wiggins and maybe Josh Okogie and Covington and then Towns, just all those different wings, many of whom are good defensively, with the exception of Wiggins, and Culver will be a rookie, so there's a curve there, but Okogie's kind of just this low-key bulldog, and then Robert Covington is one of the best team defenders in the NBA. Maybe I'm spoiling the lineup I want to see from them, but I'm definitely going to be watching to see what they do with Andrew Wiggins and then how that maybe impacts what they're going to do with Jared Culver.
Yeah. My next, or go ahead, let's do yours next.
Well, that was mine. Jared Culver was mine. So
okay,
back to you.
So that's a little bit of overlap too, because Culver is certainly something that I'm interested in as well. And maybe mine will sort of expand on that a little bit, but I think there's a question for the Timberwolves this season as to like who is the legitimate second piece of this core. I mean, Towns is an obvious one. Wiggins, you're paying max money to, but the questions regarding him are well documented. Jarrett Culver, is he the one just because there's still the veneer of, you know, he hasn't played a game yet? And is it Josh Okogie? I don't know. To me, it's a legitimate question as to if there actually is a second piece of the core right now.
Yeah, that's definitely a valid question. I don't think that you could say that it should be Andrew Wiggins just because he's being paid like it. We're entering, this is year six of their Andrew Wiggins experience. I know he's lacked role continuity, but he just, when you look at his catch and shoot numbers, when you look at his pull up jumper numbers, there's just no semblance of consistency anywhere where you can look at him and say, this is the right role for him. I've also even toyed with, do they just bring him off the bench and try and go after second units? That would, the optics wouldn't be great there because he's still young and he's owed $122.2 million over the next 4 years. And if you're hoping to up his trade value, I'm not sure bringing him off the bench in more of a limited role helps, but that's for sure a valid question. Mine's sort of similar, but it has nothing really to do with who's the number two. I just want to see their offseason, because they whiffed on D'Angelo Russell, I think it's flown under the radar a little bit. They could have done more if they fancy themselves a playoff team. I see them acting as a squad under Gershon Rosas that's going to really favor the long term. And so they did these just sneaky good pickups when you look at Jake Layman, Noah Vonleh, getting Shabazz Napier and Travion Graham, Jordan Bell even. How many of these guys are going to pan out? Who is it going to be that pans out? I know you're really interested in the Jordan Bell, Karl-Anthony Towns front court. I wouldn't mind seeing them go hyper small and throw Travion Graham at the four with Karl-Anthony Towns. Jake Layman, I know he's been a three during his time with Portland. If you can maybe get some minutes for him at the four, I think that's where he probably fits better defensively. There's just a lot of intrigue surrounding those guys. And you know how I feel about Noah Vonleh. Had some really good moments with the Knicks last year on the offensive end, and he's a little bit more mobile than people give him credit for on the defensive end. Are they going to hit on any of these guys? And, you know, it's a problem if Noah Vonleh performs really well and they have to worry about re-signing him next year, but this is what you need to do as an organization in kind of the early stages of rebuild, is rebuild or reboot these player values, take these low-cost flyers, and they have not just a couple, but I would say a bunch of tantalizing ones on the roster right now.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. And you're right, I am big on the possibilities for Jordan Bell. I think they have a lot of interesting youngish players. And like you said, maybe their offseason flew under the radar a little bit. My last one is similar to what I did with Wiggins, except for it's not will he take a next step, it's more what's the next step for Karl-Anthony Towns, because I don't know if there's anything else he can add offensively, to be honest. He's ridiculous. Maybe a little bit more passing, but I actually think he might be slightly underrated there. He doesn't pass as much as a guy like Jokic, obviously, but he's shown some interesting ability as a passer. He's one of the best shooting big men in the history of the game already, in my mind. So the natural conclusion is, if he's going to take a next step, or what his next step will be, it'll probably be as more consistent and impactful defensive anchor. And if I don't really know what the ceiling is for Karl-Anthony Towns, because the numbers he's put up through the first four seasons of his career are historic. So I'm just interested to see at what specifically is the next step for him.
Yeah, I won't pick a Karl-Anthony Towns one, but that's certainly something to consider. He's such an offensive force already, where even if you look at the time he spent on the court last year without Jimmy Butler or Derrick Rose, who was good for them for a lot of the year on the floor, the Timberwolves had a 112.9 offensive rating. That's in the 74th percentile, and that's a sample size of more than 3,100 possessions. They were actually a net positive in those minutes he played without Butler and Derrick Rose as well. And so this is, I wouldn't peg the Timberwolves as a playoff team or really even a fringe playoff team, but I do think this is a team, when you look at Karl-Anthony Towns in the vein of, this is a potential top 10 player that's going to win some games, rack up a win total that maybe people don't expect. to round out the Sexy Six, I'm kind of just wondering if this team has a trade in it, and I won't go along the lines of a win now trade, but if Andrew Wiggins has any sort of value where they can get off of him without having to include a first round pick or prospect, and maybe it's a matter of taking a contract that has 2 years left on it or something like that, would they do it? Gorgui Dieng, he has only a year left after this one. It's at $17.3 million, but is there a trade where maybe they'd consider taking back even a longer deal or perhaps a worse deal by moving him? Jeff Teague's on an expiring $19 million contract. What sort of move does this team have in it? It doesn't have a point guard of the future right now, I would say. That's why a lot of people don't think they would even consider moving Teague, because you might be able to get him for cheaper in free agency next summer, and you still do need that point guard. I'm just interested to see if there's any activity, because this team doesn't really necessarily look like a let the chips fall where they may this season. It feels like something will happen. I know the popular suggestion has been a Covington and Teague for D'Angelo Russell from the Warriors, plus there need to be other salary going out from Golden State, and that I don't think that'll happen, just because if you're the Warriors and you gambled on D'Angelo Russell to that extent where it cost you effectively Andre Iguodala and 2 first-round picks, you are going to want more than Covington and Teague on an expiring contract. So I'm just, this team to me is one to kind of monitor towards the trade deadline as we get into the season. It's not that they are overwhelmed with trade assets, but they also have contracts that are sort of begging to come off the books. And if they're so bad, does Robert Covington enter the trade market fold, where if this team's tanking, I would give up 2 first-round picks if I'm a contender for Robert Covington. And I know he has about 2 years and $25.1 million left in his contract after this year. His timeline just doesn't perfectly line with a team that's thinking about starting over. And so I could see him being one of those surprise trade candidates if the Timberwolves are worse than they're projected to be.
Yeah, absolutely.
That brings us to these quick hitters. So let's start with, is this team going to grade out higher on the offensive or the defensive end?
I'm going to go offense on this one. They've got some defensive problems in Teague and Wiggins and potentially Towns, and Covington's an amazing defender. And I was tempted to, spoiler alert, have him as like my strongest year-end award candidate with defensive player of the year, because I think he's a phenomenal defensive player. But I think there's more question marks on defense than there are on offense with this team.
Yeah, I think that's pretty clear. Any team that's going to have Karl-Anthony Towns in the middle and going to rely on Andrew Wiggins probably for 2,000-plus minutes this season, I think you have to kind of pick offense there. Although it did really seem that statistically they were better defensively in the time that Covington played on the floor for them when he came over. And so maybe they could be closer to a league average defensive team. I believe last year they finished, 21st in defensive efficiency? It was 24th, excuse me. That's something that I do think they have the personnel to improve upon. When you look at Okogie, who's a year older, you have Jared Culver. Maybe he's better defensively than a rookie. If you get any improvement from Karl-Anthony Towns, lineups that have Covington at the four. So that's just, those are all things to consider for them too. But I would agree with you wholeheartedly. Breakout candidate for this roster.
I went with Jordan Bell. You mentioned him earlier as a player that intrigues me, and he had a really good, advanced metric wise rookie season. Pulling it up right now, a 3.7 box plus minus, which is, that's really high. I'm not going to look it up right now, but I would guess that with his minimum minutes, that was probably a top 40 to 50 box plus minus that season. And then he just kind of fell off a cliff for the Warriors last season. So I'm really curious to see if he can bounce back. And I think he's a good complementary piece to Towns too. He hasn't shown any 3-point range of any kind. He's 0 of 6 from 3 in his career. But he does a lot of the dirty work type things that maybe Karl-Anthony Towns doesn't do as much of, and Towns shooting can kind of mitigate Bell's lack of shooting. It's kind of the inverse of what we saw from a lot of front courts in the aftermath of Dirk Nowitzki coming over, where the shooting big was the 4 and the 5 did all the dirty work. You kind of have that from the 4 with Bell, and the shooting from the 5 and Towns in this situation. So I'm really curious to see if those two play a lot of minutes together and what they look like.
I'm going to go with another big, Noah Vonleh, on this team. His season in New York was really just kind of low key. He's not the quintessential floor spacer, but he hit 41.2% of his long twos, shot almost 36% on no dribble threes last season. So he gives you enough range to work the pick and pop, and to where if you put him on the floor with Karl-Anthony Towns, you can say, hey, we have this five out lineup, provided the other three players on the floor can shoot threes. He's sort of undersized if you want him to use him as a center, but at 6'9" to play alongside Karl-Anthony Towns, he can be a so-so rim protector, so-so rebounder, and so Towns is going to gobble boards up on the glass anyway. He seems to me to provide them with more defensive flexibility than a Jordan Bell would, and so when we're looking at these bigs on the roster, who's going to become the one that logs the second most minutes? If you consider Robert Covington a four, I still wouldn't call him a big. And so then it moves to after him, and that probably is going to be a competition between Vonleh or Bell, unless Minnesota still has hope in Gorgui Dieng.
Yeah, I could see that. They've got multiple interesting youngish guys on the roster for sure.
Who's your strongest year-end award candidate for this team?
Like I said, I was tempted to go with Covington, even though wings winning defensive player of the year is pretty rare. And then I just thought, well, Minnesota's defense isn't going to be close to good enough team-wise for him to get legitimate consideration. I went with Andrew Wiggins for most improved player. How do you like that?
I'm not sure that I do, but I'm interested to hear your reasoning.
I don't know. There's a little part of me that thinks all of the talk from Ryan Saunders and everyone else around the Timberwolves this summer might actually come to fruition for the first time. And like we've said a few times now, over 5 years that he's been in the NBA, maybe his shot profile improves. Maybe he adds a little bit of playmaking. His numbers bounce back, at least like raw number wise, back to where they were before the Tom Thibodeau era, adds a little efficiency. I don't know. The other reason I kind of picked him is it's hard to find legitimate year-end award candidates other than that. If we're going to eliminate stuff like All-NBA, which, that's an easy one for Towns, I don't think Towns is going to rise up to the level of MVP consideration. I don't know who on their team would be a legitimate six-man candidate. So I think it was almost like default I went with Wiggins for most improved.
Yeah, I guess that's a fair default. I went with a default of my own, though. I thought about picking Covington for most improved player, so same player, different award than you. I just ultimately don't know if they would give him the role expansion on offense. He's not someone that you want with the ball in his hands, and I don't know that they have a reason to test that out when you have Wiggins and Teague and Napier and Jarrett Culver and even Josh Kogi on the roster. So I went with Jarrett Culver for Rookie of the Year. I don't know that he's actually going to have the volume necessary, but they did kind of go in on him, trading the pick that becomes Cameron Johnson and Dario Saric for him. And so it doesn't seem that they're Atlanta Hawks level high on DeAndre Hunter. And when you're talking about the fact a lot of people, I don't think, expect him to start. I think the starting lineup projects to have Wiggins and Okogie in it before they do Jarrett Culver. That could hurt him, but just looking at the opportunity he could have, where if he's not going to start, I think you would say he's there. Sixth man, that might add to more reps than maybe some of the other top rookies. It's going to be tough to beat out Zion Williamson, of course, tough to beat out Ja Morant when there's no point guard in front of him in Memphis. But when you look at other rookies, I don't think it's a stretch to say that he could be one of the three or four that are going to get the most opportunities by sheer volume. And that could, in theory, then buttress his Rookie of the Year case.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Actually, I probably should have given that more consideration than I did, but you brought up Zion Williamson, and that would be the kicker on that one for me.
We move on to the player most. Oh, and I'm sorry, the lineup you're dying to see from this team.
I want Culver at the one, so that was sort of the starting point for this, and then I tried to fill it out with as many wings. So I've got Culver at the one, Okogie at the two, Wiggins at the three, Covington at the four, and Cat at the five. Because like you've said a few times over the course of this pod, is it'll be interesting to see what kind of playmaking chops Culver has as the lead dog in that sort of a role. So that's the main reason I'm going with the lineup I'm going with.
I want to see also, I guess you can call Culver the one in this scenario. I think you would have to. Then Josh Okogie with Robert Covington, Karl Anthony Towns. And I didn't really know what to do with this fifth spot. I was tempted to just say Noah Vonleh, him or Jake Layman. I'm kind of undecided there. Towns and Vonleh give it more of a traditional front court feel, which I feel like would be a little odd if you're going with a wing like Culver at the one. At the same time, that lineup is then all of a sudden kind of, it's not big, but it is also big because you're looking, if Culver's your point guard and he's 6'7", Kogi's, he's about the right size to guard twos, and then you go with Robert Covington at the three with Vonleh at the four and Towns at the five. There is just good size and I would say some defensive malleability in that lineup, and so that's something I'd be looking to see from them. Of course, now all of a sudden you have like $50 million plus on the bench with Teague and Wiggins, so I don't know how often that happens.
Yeah, that's a certainly a consideration for them.
Player most likely to be traded on this team.
I was tempted to go Wiggins here. I still think that's probably going to be a pretty tough contract to move. I guess there could be some team that convinces themselves, well, he's got the pedigree and he hasn't had the right system or coaching or organization around him. Maybe we can be the answer and just bet on the talent. But I went with Teague because it's like decent salary matching money. It's an expiring contract. But I actually think there's a decent number of guys who have the potential to be traded on this team. You mentioned Georgie Dang as well. Or Jang, Georgie Jang. Hopefully, I pronounced that right. There's a bunch of options. I just kind of went with Teague because of I think ultimately the expiring contract is what swayed me.
Yeah, same here. The dare to be bold pick would be Covington for the reasons I laid out before. Wiggins is just, it's tough because of all that money he has left on his contract, and I just don't know what team even gambles on it. Maybe Wiggins for Nicholas Batum is something that Charlotte considers, but. You know, if they're just about to kind of get out of salary cap hell in the next 2 years, then again, they did commit, you know, 3 years and way too much money to Terry Rozier. So, but that's like one of the few situations that I could see maybe possibly working out. I just don't know what other team is going to be the one that talks themselves into Andrew Wiggins.
Yeah, I just, your mention of Charlotte was, intriguing to me, one that I hadn't thought of, because I think it is kind of hard to come up with real situations.
Timberwolves were 11th in the West last year. Where do you think they'll finish in the West this year?
I went with a wide open range here, and I left the door cracked for the playoffs. I said 8-14. I don't think they'll make the playoffs, but it's such a mess up and down the Western Conference. There's the first group, like 1-6 or 7, that's impossible to predict, and then I think there's another group after that that's impossible to predict, and I think the only thing that's close to a sure thing is Memphis at 15, but I'm not even 100% confident on that.
I haven't been going with ranges. I've just been trying to pick like not a worst case or best case scenario, but like a 50% at the medium. I think it's 11 for this team again, just because you look at every squad that finished in front of them last year. The only one that I could see maybe falling behind this year is Oklahoma City Thunder, and that's assuming they trade Danilo Gallinari, maybe Chris Paul as well during the middle of the season. But there are teams behind them that could replace them. I would think that they're better than the Suns and the Grizzlies, but I wouldn't be ready to guarantee that. I would think that they're better than the Mavericks too. Dallas fans definitely have to hate me by now, but I wouldn't guarantee that either. And then the Pelicans, they could be better than them, but I don't think they'll end up being better. So there should be at least one team that leapfrogs whatever team falls behind the Timberwolves. And so 11th feels like kind of a happy medium for them once again.
Boldish, yeah, I think that's fair.
Boldish prediction for the Timberwolves.
Mine is, it goes along with an earlier prediction of mine. I think Wiggins is decent. There's my bold prediction. And I can't go much further than decent.
I think this is the season that, maybe this isn't bold enough, that Karl Anthony Towns becomes a consensus top 10 player. He's gotten a bad rap because he's not a great defender, and the Timberwolves have not had a ton of success with him. The Jimmy Butler requesting out and the rumors that he wasn't impressed with Wiggins and Towns' worth ethic, I think kind of colored the perception of him a little bit too. But the guy is an all-star, all-NBA caliber player. He could be in the MVP conversation if he's ever on a playoff team. I don't think they've given him the tools yet to say, if he doesn't enter the MVP conversation, he's failed. There needs to be the element of winning there, and the Timberwolves just aren't yet built to do that. But Towns, just this offensive mastermind. And if he's going to get even more touches this year, just to see his usage rate sort of elevate, that's going to be a huge for his case. And so I wouldn't say he's going to fly under the radar, but it wouldn't surprise me if his usage rate is above 30 this season and we just see him put up historical numbers again on historical efficiency. Once again, I do worry about maybe how he'll shoot the three ball on this team when you look at they don't really have a bunch of high-level creators around him to open up the floor, but he did just fine last year, true shooting of over 62. I think this is just the year where we look at it and say, you know, there's always that towards the end of the top 10. It's where do we put Lillard and Kyrie or Rudy Gobert, all those names that get thrown out there, Paul George. I just think Karl Anthony Towns is going to be a certified top 10 player by the end of the season.
I can dig that.
Humans have been shaving for thousands of years. During that time, the secret to a great shave hasn't changed much. The ancient Greeks didn't need flex balls, they didn't need heated handles, and neither do you. That's why Harry's doesn't overcharge you to add gimmicky features to their razors. They focus on delivering what actually matters. Sharp, durable blades at a fair price. I love Harry's because it gives me the closest shave ever with an easy glide, and the razors come at a low price. Do us a favor. Check out harrys.com/bluewire for your free trial today. Harry's is a return to the essential. Quality, durable blades at a fair price. It comes out to just $2 per blade. Harry's is also just super convenient. Blade refills are shipped right to your house when you sign up for a subscription. And there's no risk for trying them out. If you don't love your shave, let them know and they'll give you a full refund. Listeners of Hardwood Knox can redeem their Harry's trial set at harrys.com/bluewire. You'll get a weighted ergonomic handle for a firm grip, a 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel with aloe to keep your skin hydrated, and a travel blade cover to keep your razor dry and easy to grab on the go. Go to harrys.com/bluewire to start shaving better today. That means that we get to move on to the Portland Trailblazers. They were 53-29 last year, third in the Western Conference overall. Their offseason was just sort of tough to pin down for me. Their notable additions include Anthony Tolliver, Hassan Whiteside, Kent Bazemore, Mario Hezonja, Nasir Little, and Pau Gasol. Their notable exits include Al-Farouq Aminu, Enes Kanter, Evan Turner, Jake Lehman, Myers Leonard, Maurice Harkless, and Seth Curry. Notable re-signings include Rodney Hood. Sexy Six, what do you got for me, Andy Bailey?
First on their offseason, I've posted this stat, I think a couple different articles now, but their outgoing players are projected for like more than double the wins above replacement that the incoming players are for this season. So it was a weird off season for sure. And I guess they felt like they needed to shake things up. I'm just not sure it was a real effective one. My first question is pretty obvious. It's how much will they miss Nurkic for however long he's out? I think the timetable right now is indefinite. So I don't know when he'll be back. Hassan Whiteside, I think, bridges the gap a little bit on defense, but he's not close to Nurkic's level as an offensive player, mostly because of Nurkic's playmaking that he showed last season. So
yeah, Hassan Whiteside also cannot even kind of short roll the way that Nurkic does.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great point. I think they're in a world of hurt. this is another number I looked up recently, and I don't remember it off the top of my head, but they were something like minus 3 or 4 points per 100 possessions when Lillard and McCollum were on the floor without Nurkic last year. He was a great sort of linchpin piece to a lot of what they did, and it'll be interesting to see how they adjust without him. So that's a big one for me.
To your point, can you guess what percent chance 538 gives the Blazers of making the playoffs next year?
I've looked this up before, but I don't remember it. I'll say like 40%.
37.
Oh, wow. So even lower than I thought. Yeah.
They always just tend to outperform expectations, though. No one expected them to win 53 games last year. And they did that while dealing with Nurkic's absence later in the season. I didn't even think it was a guarantee he would return this year because compound leg fractures are no joke, but I guess it happened early enough. It was March, right? Where he injured that.
Yeah, I think it was before the playoffs even. Yeah. So maybe. Yeah, I don't know.
Everyone expects him to come back is my point now. And I didn't assume, but thought there was a high chance he missed the year. When he comes back though, it's probably valuable to get him reps, but how good is he supposed to be? For me though, this team, what is the backup point guard situation? And the answer is they don't really have one. I don't think it's fair to expect Anthony Simons to take on a bulk of the playmaking duties. I'm also not entirely sure that that's ultimately his game. He sort of seems like he can be this microwave scorer where he's pumping in baskets from all over the court and even off the dribble, but does he have the table setting ceiling of someone who can run point? And so now you're looking at, are we going to see lineups where Bazemore runs point, Mario Hezonja, maybe even Rodney Hood a little bit? Do they try and combine those to where they're kind of bigger in the backcourt now, but you don't have a primary playmaker? You're using Kent Bazemore and Hood, or Kent Bazemore and Simons, or something along those lines. I do think, though, that we're going to see more staggered minutes from CJ McCollum and Damian Lillard, which is something Portland largely punted on last year. I just don't think they're going to have that luxury this year. And if they do decide to go that route anyway, that only makes this question all the more interesting, because at least you can say CJ McCollum isn't the best playmaker, but you could envision him carrying lineups without Damian Lillard. If they're not going to give him a high volume of in those arrangements, though, then really what's happening? Is it just Simons, or are they going to get weird?
Yeah, I think I just kind of assumed that it's going to be a three guard rotation with those two, and it's largely position, or those three, three guard rotation with two would be interesting. Three guard rotation with those three, and it's mostly positionless between them. But I don't think that alleviates any of the concerns that you just brought up. I mean, I think they're all still there, so I think that's very valid.
Can you even guess though how many possessions CJ McCollum logged without Damian Lillard last year?
I'll say 500.
Less, fewer, whatever you want to say.
Huh? What is it?
It was under 400 possessions, which was just not something
that's a lot fewer than I would have expected.
Yeah, for sure. And so it was clear that they punted on that. I would expect that number to go up.
I've already kind of touched on my second one. It's just, how much did the overhaul actually help? Like, are Rodney Hood, Kent Bazemore, and Rodney Hood was there last year, but not for the entire season. But basically, is what's there now better than what they had with Aminu and Harkless? And that the answer for me is I don't know. I think that's a toss up.
Yeah, the defensive, I guess if you want to use the word regression, feels like it's going to be something to monitor. Maybe there's a chance that Hassan Whiteside is a little bit better for them than Jusuf Nurkić, but when you're dropping back on pick and rolls, Nurkić just seemed like such a perfect fit for what Portland was doing defensively. And so I don't know if you can necessarily count on Whiteside being more than a lateral move on that end of the floor. And so then what happens? Who's defending bigger wings on this team? Which was the question for me. It's, you know, you had Aminu and Harkless who both did that for them last year. So this is where overlap comes in. Does that responsibility, I guess it falls to Rodney Hood at this point? And now you're going to be asking Zach Collins, really good defender, probably to be going after a lot of mobile fours, just because,
That's a little bit scary to me.
Yeah, there'll be lineups with him at the five. It's not like you have us on Whiteside, but, you know, Pau Gasol's a zillion years old, so he's not going to log a ton of time, but there's just going to be stretches where you have to play Collins at the four. That if I had to guess, that probably ends up being his primary position again this year.
Yeah, they might even have, they're probably going to have to start him at the four.
Right. That would be, but I'm saying just because you don't have, you know, Pau Gasol is just their backup center right now until Nurkić comes back. Yeah. So there's the door's open, but if you had to pick where he's going to log the most time, I think you would pick power forward. I'm not entirely sure. But who is actually going to guard those bigger wings? I think it's Rodney Hood, but that's not exactly reassuring.
No, it's definitely not.
What's your third one for this team?
I almost feel cheap going with this because it's been a talking point for I don't know how many years now, but have we reached the Lillard-McCollum ceiling? And again, I feel it almost feels dumb to ask it at this point. Like you said, they've outperformed expectations so many years. There was a while there where Memphis was always the team that I gave up on prematurely. I sort of predicted their demise for 3 or 4 years before it actually happened. And now I think that's transferred to the Blazers because I've been out on them for 2 or 3 years now. And every year Damian Lillard's absurd and the team outperforms expectations. And last year they made it all the way to the conference finals. So maybe it's a little bit premature to predict the demise of this team. But I'm very, very worried that they've hit their peak already.
It does seem that that's become a question every year, not unlike the Grizzlies as the grit and grind era aged out.
Yep.
I'm not quite sure that we're there yet to the extent. Would you pick them as a playoff team right now?
See, I don't have a ton of confidence in them making the playoffs. I haven't like sat down and mapped out these are the 8 teams I think are going to make it. But I think Portland would be on the bubble for me.
Probably fair. I'm just now where I'm at the point conditioned not to doubt the Spurs. I'm a little bit of the same way with any team that Damian Lillard's on. And so my third one, I'll combine it since there was overlap in the last one with ours, is one, does the Hassan Whiteside signing just work out? Because that was a cultural flex by the Blazers, as others have put on Twitter. That's not me using unique phrasing. They made this trade, I think, because you have Damian Lillard in the locker room. We've seen Hassan Whiteside grouse about playing time and role, not you know, and all that in Miami. That was, I would say, an unceremonious end. Does that work out? And then my bigger question about this team from there, is this the year where we see them make a bigger midseason trade? Neil Olshey has always kind of been, when he's made moves at the deadline, they've kind of been just, not under the radar, but just smaller types, and they try and look to pick up value from distressed assets like a Yusuf Nurkic. But they have some interesting filler contracts all of a sudden now. And if you're willing to trade your first round pick, you know, you could really get in to some interesting trade packages. You have Kent Bazemore's expiring deal. You have Hassan Whiteside's expiring deal. So you have money filler there. I don't know what player that is. A lot of people say Kevin Love. I don't really know if he helps this team just because he elevates their offensive ceiling. And I don't know that they need that at this point. They're a team to me that if Robert Covington becomes available, they need to be all over that. Filler salary and throw in 2 first rounders is just sort of a nice deal for them. I don't think that they would get involved. Let's say Bradley Beal becomes available. That package probably takes Anthony Simons, and I don't know how much value Beal adds when you have McCollum and Lillard. That would be just an insane mix of ball handling and off-ball shooting, though, if you had Beal, McCollum, and Lillard. I'm not saying they would get involved in trade negotiations. I'm just saying if the Wizards make Beal available, I do think Portland could offer one of the more interesting trade packages. It's hard to identify some other bigger names, though, that might hit the trade market. Drew Holiday would be perfect for them, but it doesn't seem like he's leaving the Pelicans anytime soon. So just looking at the contracts they have, their future pick commitments, and maybe they're even willing to include Nasir Little in this, in deals. I don't know what it would take for them to give up on a Zach Collins or an Anthony Simons. Again, it'd probably have to be an all-star wing, and I don't think any one of those is going to become available. Though I do think Jimmy Butler may inevitably be unhappy in Miami, but that might be something to monitor years down the line. Does this team, though, have a bigger midseason trade in it?
Yeah, that'll be interesting to monitor for sure.
Will they grade out higher on the offensive end or defensive end?
I went offense on this one. I think this is another one that's pretty easy. You mentioned the loss of, and we both mentioned the loss of Aminu and Harkless, versatile, switchable defenders. I think a lot of the defensive criticisms on Whiteside have actually become a little overblown over the last couple of years, but I also don't think he's like an elite defensive anchor. And then the issues defensively with Lillard and McCollum have been well documented. So I think this one's obviously offense.
And where Lillard has gotten just a little bit better, where it seems like he makes, I don't think he's good, he makes fewer mistakes and doesn't mm-hmm. get pancaked on as many screens. It seems like McCollum, it just has been bad defensively. And with Hassan Whiteside, I probably agree with you, but he's still that block chaser. That doesn't change. I would go offense as well. I am intrigued to see whether they can be a top 5 offensive team again, though. They were 4th in points scored per 100 possessions per cleaning the glass last year. I do think they have the firepower to do it again, but there might be an offensive trade-off from losing Yusuf Nurkic. He was just so important to their playmaking, and you don't mm-hmm. have that in any of your bigs now. Hassan Whiteside, Zach Collins, Tolliver, nobody.
Yeah, I think that's a huge loss.
Breakout candidate for this team seems fairly straightforward.
Yeah, I think the obvious pick here is Anfernee Simons. Like you said, there really isn't a true backup point guard, so he's going to get a lot of opportunity to play alongside Lillard and McCollum. So I think it's definitely him.
And he has to get the opportunity now. And he, you know, in the final game of the regular season where Portland ran a 6-man rotation, I think it was, he played all 48 minutes, just lit up the Sacramento Kings for what did he drop? He dropped 37 points, 9 assists, 6 rebounds, shot 13 of 21 from the floor. I think I looked this up earlier in the summer. All but one of his made pull-up threes during the season came during that game. So just, I know he didn't play a ton of minutes, but that's still really funny to me. And maybe that game is sort of this harbinger of, I know he wasn't going up against the full King squad for most of that game anyway, but maybe he has the chops to be that backup playmaker. And even if you are going to split up McCollum and Lillard more, if he's able to run point for you for stretches, that ends up being absolutely monstrous.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he's the obvious one.
Strongest year-end award candidate for this team.
This is another one that's kind of hard, but I think it's Lillard for MVP, even though I don't think he's quite going to crack that group. But I think that's almost the default call for me.
And it needs to be. It's mine as well, because if they end up flirting with 50 victories again in the Western Conference as it is now, and if they're a top 4 seed, he has to be one of the strongest candidates available. And I'm not saying it's because people expect the Blazers to be terrible, but the projection models are so low on them. People are sort of predicting not their demise, but they're asking the same question that you are, and even I am to some extent, is, has this core sort of peaked? Do they have another gear? Did the changes they make, did they go too far towards the offensive side of the floor? If they end up being 49, 50, if they match 53 wins or anything absurd like that again, I would think he would have to be in the top 3 of MVP voting.
Yeah, I think if that confluence of events happens, then yeah, he's probably in there.
Offbeat lineup you want to see from this team?
I went Lillard, McCollum, Simons, and I think it's like a 6'9", 6'10 wingspan at the 3, Rodney Hood at the 4, and Zach Collins at the 5. Small ball, funky, lots of playmaking, lots of shooting. I wouldn't actually be stunned if we saw this lineup.
I agree with you. My lineup includes 4 of the same, but I pulled Zach Collins for Mario Hezonja. You're just not. You're not going to be good defensively in the lineup that you rolled out anyway, or maybe in any lineup that you roll out.
Yeah, so
that's especially if it's on the smaller end. If you're pulling us on Whiteside, so just lean into it. Let's just see what happens. If I think Hezonja needs to be hitting his threes at close to a league average clip for this to work out, but just all those guys in that lineup can then handle the ball. I would say 4 to all of them can be semi-reliable spot-up shooters. Just let's see what happens. Just try it for stretches. If you're bottom 10, bottom 7 defensively anyway on the season, just roll it out. Let's see what happens.
Yeah. If they play Hezonja at the 5, I'm going to be very happy.
They might have to play Hezonja at the 1. He might log time in all 5 positions for them this year.
That would be awesome. Yeah.
Player most likely to be traded on the Blazers?
I'm going with Whiteside. He's got a, and I know that I'm not the first person to speculate about this, but he's got a big old salary that you can send out for maybe somebody who makes a little bit more, you know, a more switchable defender type of a player. So it's Whiteside for me.
I want to deviate from what you're picking, but I can't, because I ultimately believe Kent Bazemore ends up being too important to this team defensively, which is an issue in itself, because Bazemore's always been, to me, overrated as a defender, then underrated for what he can do on the offensive end. And so I don't think that you can actually afford to give him up, again, unless you're getting a Jimmy Butler back, which that type of player doesn't seem like they're going to become available this year. So it has to be Hassan Whiteside for me too. A lot of people just speculated that that's the reason they traded for him, is that they could take back more salary than they would have by having Myers Leonard and Mo Harkless. They really didn't need to get rid of them if they wanted to go after a Kevin Love or a superstar type trade. They didn't need Hassan Whiteside's anchor, so I don't buy into that, but I do buy into the notion that he is the most likely player to be traded on this roster. Where do you think they'll land in the Western Conference?
I'm going with a range again, slightly higher than the Timberwolves. I'm saying 6 through 12.
Oh my God. So
I'm leaving a lot of room for them to miss the playoffs, obviously.
I would say that's a fair range. I'm going to say they finish fifth in the West. Now, if you're asking me to guarantee that there are going to be, you know, let's say six to seven teams that they're in front of in the West, I can't do that. But I don't think that they're clearly inferior to anyone in the West. I mean, if you want to throw the Lakers and the Clippers in there, yes, I'll go with that. I don't even know how much worse they are than the Denver Nuggets or the Utah Jazz, but those are two teams that I would also put in front of them. I could see maybe the Golden State Warriors finishing in front of them as well. And I think you could talk yourself into a bunch of teams finishing in front of them, but the only guaranteed ones I think would be the Lakers, Clippers, and I'll stretch it to the Nuggets and Jazz. And so I'm just going to throw them in fifth because they've outperformed projections, I think, every year for the last 25 decades or whatever it's been. So that might even constitute a bold prediction at this point.
Yeah, my bold prediction is the inverse. I'm going to go ahead and say they missed the playoffs. How about that?
Holy fuck. That's just, wow. So if you had to pick between the Blazers and Spurs.
And I preface that, or I the opposite of preface that by saying what I said earlier. I've been predicting the demise of the Blazers for 2 or 3 years now and have been obviously wrong each time. So take it with more than a grain of salt. Take it with a rock of salt.
A rock of salt. I like it. My bold prediction is going to be, wait for it, that this is the year they trade their first round pick and or make a blockbuster deal at the trade deadline. I think it's going to be a higher profile trade than anything we've really seen from them in recent history. I don't know what the player is going to be, but there are always, you know, as we get into December and then closer to the trade deadline, there's always players that pop up, and I think it's going to end up being someone that we're not talking about. Not Kevin Love, not Robert Covington. I just feel like there's going to be a surprise move. Maybe it's not a surprise at the time because we'll have a better feel for which players are available, but this is, I won't call it all in, but I think they'll be good enough to talk themselves into to giving up their first round pick or just making an overall blockbuster.
I can see that.
Final team in the Northwest Division, the Denver Nuggets, 54-28. Last year, they didn't do much this offseason, but they didn't need to, and they actually wound up having one of the better offseasons. Their notable additions, Bol Bol and Jeremy Grant. Notable exits, Isaiah Thomas, Trey Lyles, Tyler Lydon. Notable re-signings, they extended Jamal Murray. I think that was a five-year, $169.7 million deal. Close to the max, I believe. I don't think that's quite the max. So their offseason was just good, but I still think there are people who wonder whether they have a high postseason ceiling. What do you have to kick off the Sexy Six, Andrew D. Bailey?
What does Michael Porter provide? He's played one preseason game so far. He was limited to only second half minutes. They're trying to sort out a big log jam at the three, and so they played two of their options in the first half, two of their options in the second half. He was hitting fadeaway, turnaround, long twos, and chirping at the opposing bench, and his shot selection was not great, but he actually looked pretty good to me. And this is, again, this is not, you know, revelatory or anything, but if he's even good, forget like great right off the bat, because that's obviously pretty rare for a rookie, but if he's even good, Denver goes from scary to whatever's after scary.
Super scary.
There you go.
So mine will step on the toes of that then, because I think if he is good, it sort of becomes a quandary of, can you run out more small ball combinations? Since I think Jeremy Grant's going to lock plenty of time at the three and is as positionless as defenders come on the wings, but it does seem like he's best suited at the four, and there were even lineups in OKC where he played the five. Will Denver get to those minutes where Paul Millsap is the five or Grant's the four, maybe even Grant's the five? It's, they have Nikola Jokic. I understand that, but there are going to be minutes when he's not on the court. Are they still going to favor Mason Plumlee as the backup center? Or, in my opinion, I think it should be Paul Millsap is just your backup center. And then maybe that opens some minutes for Jared Vanderbilt. Should you be going Millsap Grant in the front court? And it almost becomes a must if Michael Porter Jr. ends up being good. So, because he could lock some time at the four, but then he's also your three. I want to see more small ball from Denver. And again, it runs counterintuitive to having Nikola Jokic borderline top five, definitely a top seven player in the NBA right now. Still, there are going to be minutes when he's not on the court.
Yeah. I can definitely see that. My next one is, it kind of goes along with that, is what is Jeremy Grant's role specifically? I want to see him play some 5-2, but like you said, he's a guy who can really log time at least three positions, 3, 4, and 5. And you need Jokic out there for, you know, at least 33, 34 minutes a game. But they do have some creative or potentially creative things that they can do with the five. In addition to Grant there, I actually think it might be interesting to even see some Porter minutes at the five. That could be fun. Cause he's, you know, he's 6'10" and in today's NBA.
Well, what is that without shoes? That might be 6'4".
Yeah, that's a good point. Jeremy Grant specifically, sort of what's his role? And is it just, you know, he doesn't really have a role. He just kind of fills holes all over the roster.
Good observation. My second one's going to be, what does Will Barton look like this year? Just after dealing with that core muscle injury last season, he was not good. Did not get to the rim as frequently. His free throw attempt rate plummeted. He was nowhere near as efficient from the field. And if he's not going to be, you know, he can play make a little bit, but if he's not going to be giving you instant offense off the dribble, whether it's on his pull-up jumpers or getting to the rim in the line, that becomes a problem. He's not, you know, you can use him as a wing insofar as he's performing up to snuff offensively, but if he's not, he doesn't play well enough defensively on a regular enough basis anyway to then continue giving him a bulk of those minutes. And all of a sudden that contract then, it wasn't looked at as a steal when they gave it, but I think that you could have said it was market value. And now, including this season with 3 years and $41.2 million, you have a miniature financial roadblock on your docket, and they need a bounce back season from him. They don't need it offensively. They just need it because he's commanding more than, substantially more than the mid-level salary. And if you're going to commit that much to an asset, you need him to deliver.
Yeah. I'm worried about Will Barton. I almost feel like the one good season he had in Denver might have been an outlier. And now he's got health problems to go along with it. So he's a big question mark. That's a good one to identify. My last one is kind of similar to what I said about Towns, but it's just, if there's a next level for Nikola Jokic, what is it? And I think it's the same thing. If he becomes a little bit more consistent on defense, he's even better, which is probably hard to imagine. I don't think he's going to become this, you know, top tier rim protector or anything like that. But maybe he gets a little bit better in the pick and roll. Maybe he moves his feet a little bit better on the perimeter. I don't think those things are out of the question.
My last one wants to be, will Jared Vanderbilt see substantial court time? But I don't want to be just too niche there. I'm actually going to say, does this team, this same as the Blazers, have a big mid-season deal in it? They look like they're built for it a little bit. Barton, if he's playing okay enough, is good salary filler. Mason Plumlee's expiring deal, $14 million. And then you can justify giving up a Michael Porter Jr., even a Gary Harris. If you're bringing someone back, the popular suggestion has been Bradley Beal. I'm not going to lie, this is where I'm going to sort of deviate from consensus. They would be a team that I'd be interested in seeing Chris Paul on. If you can just cobble together salary filler for salary filler, and it starts with probably Plumlee and Barton, and then someone to or two to make up the difference with money coming out, with Chris Paul's salary coming out of OKC. He is making this year $38.5 million, and so it has to be maybe another sizable one, but I'd just be interested. I know, I guess it takes the ball more out of Jamal Murray's hands, but if he's not on the superstar track, maybe you don't want to get into the Chris Paul deal. If you're not giving up Porter Jr., Gary Harris, or Murray, I would consider going after Chris Paul if I'm Denver.
I would be more worried about taking the ball out of Jokic's hands. I don't think it would be like destined for disaster, but I'm not as high on that as you are.
It's because you're a hater. A lower key one would be if Milwaukee makes Eric Bledsoe available and you can get him for mostly filler, just for
he's an interesting one with Jokic. I think his cutting ability with Jokic could be interesting for sure.
And then what he does, you know, defensively, borderline all defense guard, at least in the East,
for sure.
Are they going to grade out higher on the offensive end or defensive end?
I think this one's pretty easy. Offense.
Did we go? I'm with you. Did we go all offense on this podcast? We did.
I think so. Yeah.
I don't know what else are you supposed to pick. So.
No, with these three teams, they were all pretty obvious.
Denver was 7th in offensive efficiency per cleaning the glass. They were 11th in non-garbage time defensive efficiency, though. And I think they...
I was actually going to say 7th felt like an underachievement for them last year offensively. I think they should be better than that.
My guess would be yes, too, if you're expecting Jamal Murray to take steps forward. But again, if Will Barton isn't playing well and you're giving actual reps to MPJ and he's not playing well, I could see it being similar or falling, and their defensive ceiling just might be higher overall because you add Jeremy Grant. So I think of the teams, looking at the Blazers, Timberwolves, and Nuggets, Denver is the most likely one of the three-team gaggle to have a better defense than offense, which is kind of bizarre to say.
Yeah, that is kind of funny. That's a big part of their ceiling, though. I mean, if they can replicate what they did defensively last year, get a little bit better, then that's when they become legitimate title contenders.
Breakout candidate for this roster.
I think this one's pretty obviously Porter. there wasn't a lot of turnover on this roster this summer, so we know what a lot of these guys are other than Porter. So he's kind of the natural one there.
I'm kind of tempted to go with Jamal Murray. And I know he kind of has the numbers last season of someone who isn't slated for a breakout now in the following year. But they just need him to be more consistent this season and to put up second star numbers. And I'm not talking, you know, he might need to score over 20 points a game, depending on whatever drop off you get from Will Barton. We haven't really talked about Gary Harris. He might be due for a bounce back year. But if his 3-point shooting kind of suffers again, I know it rebounded towards the end of the year. Jamal Murray becomes that much bigger. Can he lead lineups without Jokic on the floor? I know the offense has been typically okay during those stretches, but those lineups aren't usually net pluses. I'm looking to see then if Jamal Murray gets to the point where we look at his contract and say, all right, it was just even more justifiable. I get why the Nuggets gave it to him no matter what, but is he going to sort of actualize that extension gamble?
The Nuggets makes me think of Nucky Thompson in Boardwalk Empire.
Never seen that show.
Offbeat lineup. I'm going to go very small and very positionless. Monte Morris, Jamal Murray. Oh, I skipped one, didn't I? That's what happens when I try to take over the categories.
Strongest year-end award candidate.
I'm going to go Jokic MVP.
Yeah, I don't know what else. You could maybe Mike Malone for Coach of the Year. But you have to believe that Denver's really going to blow the West out of the water. And now that they're, I don't know if you would call them the most veteran team, but they've been to the playoffs. Maybe the regular season just isn't going to mean as much to them.
Yeah.
Coach of the Year would be very clearly the second one for me, unless you think that Will Barton or someone else is going to contend for Sixth Man of the Year, which isn't absurd. They have, I think you can talk yourself into a few different ones, at least three: MVP, Coach of the Year, and Sixth Man of the Year. Maybe even Most Improved Player, depending on how you feel about Jamal Murray. But Jokic for MVP seems like the obvious one.
If Jokic splits the difference between what he did in the regular season and the playoffs last year, and those are like his regular season numbers this year, he's going to be low 20s in scoring, 11 or 12 rebounds, 7 or 8 assists. And if Denver's the number one team in the West with that stat line, he's got to be a legitimate contender.
Take it one step further. They are probably one of the, if you were to name 5 teams or even 3 or 4 that could have the best regular season record, Denver, I think, is one of the two in that conversation.
They're in the mix. Yeah.
And that would, again, bolster his MVP case. Now we're where you want to be. Offbeat lineup, you're dying to see.
Very small and very positionless. Again, Monte Morris, Jamal Murray, Gary Harris, Jeremy Grant, and Michael Porter. Lots of playmaking, lots of shooting, not a ton of defense, lot on the shoulders of Jeremy Grant in this particular lineup. But, you know, it's obviously not something you'd play a ton of minutes with, but just something I'd be curious to see. How positionless and how small can they get?
Okay, so I'm going to go probably in a borderline detrimental direction. Will Barton at the one, Gary Harris.
You're already detrimental.
Gary Harris, Malik Beasley, Jeremy Grant, Paul Millsap.
I can dig it. And Will Barton, I kind of joke when I say that. He actually did play a lot of backup point guard for them in that one good season he had. So it's not too wild.
Yeah, and if you want to take out Malik Beasley for Michael Porter Jr., assuming he's playing well, you won't find – gripes about that. But Malik Beasley's just another interesting thing about this team. He kind of showed some off the dribble wiggle, a small volume.
He's good.
Yeah, and yeah, a good catch and shoot guy. And he can defend some threes, but that's, you know, I think right now Jeremy Grant's the only definitive player on this team that you can count on to defend shooter wings.
Yeah.
Player most likely to be traded.
Speaking of Beasley, I almost went with him here because, you know, he's got new representation. It doesn't look like they're going to get an extension done for him, just because I think he's going to cost a decent amount of money. He's a good player. But I think the size of his salary makes him slightly less tradable than Mason Plumlee. He's the pick I went with here.
Same here. If you had to go with one of just their lower cost assets, where it's who are they going to attach to Plumlee to maybe get a deal done, it's probably Malik Beasley. His bird rights entering restricted free agency, teams might see value in that, especially because depending on the team, there aren't a ton that are going to have cap space. A lot of them are rebuilding squads. Cleveland, Atlanta, those are two squads projected to have cap space. Even Charlotte might be able to have some flexibility, though it won't be a ton. So when you're looking at the number of teams that are going to have the money to go after him, it's not a lot. And so there will be more value in having him on your books already than there normally would be. I kind of wanted to go Juan Hernan Gomez too, but I think Denver fans seem to be high on him, and we'll see if he can get by playing more three now that he's healthy this year. Where do you think they'll finish in the Western Conference?
Going with another range, and for this one, I'm going 1-4. You mentioned the teams already. I think it's the Clippers, the Lakers, the Blazers, and the Nuggets are all – not the Blazers. The Jazz and the Nuggets.
I was about to say, that was a quick right about phase.
Yeah, I was going to say right after I predicted the Blazers missed the playoffs. But no, that's my range for the Nuggets, 1-4.
Their ceiling is 1. My pick for them is just going to be 2. I think from the Lakers, Jazz, Clippers trio, at least 1 ends up being better than them. I could see the Nuggets falling as low as 4th, maybe 5th, if you talk yourself into the Rockets. I would say 5th is their, maybe 6th is their basement, though.
And I should have made the range 1-5, because I think the Rockets are in that group, too. That's my fault.
But it does seem like this team has a pretty high floor. Maybe you're still not convinced on them in the postseason, but regular season-wise, I think it has an extremely high floor. One of the highest in the league.
Yeah.
Bold prediction for the Denver Nuggets from Andrew Bailey.
I'm going to say Jokic MVP. How about that?
What? That almost just doesn't feel bold enough.
Well, I have NBA championship written down, but then I realized I think I did the same thing with the Jazz. So that's off the table.
My bold prediction is that Will Barton finishes the season on another team. There you go.
I'm not sure that's super bold either.
All right, fine. Well, the other one that I have written down is Jared Vanderbilt plays an actual role.
Just say Jared Vanderbilt wins MVP.
Yeah, all right. Jared Vanderbilt wins MVP, Defensive Player of the Year, Most Improved Player, all and Sixth Man of the Year all at once. I think
that's the boldest take, I think, certainly the entire series has had. So
I'm just
kudos
saying they need to
you.
Find a way to give him actual minutes. Just a rebounding machine can run the floor and is really just, I don't know, he's kind of like slippery on overall for someone with his size. I want to see Jared Vanderbilt get minutes, and so I'm trying to speak it into existence like LeVar Ball.
Yeah. Well, the thing that's tough about the Nuggets is they have 12 or 13 guys that would play on almost every team in the NBA. So it's tough to find minutes for everybody. But I'm with you. I think Vanderbilt's intriguing. One of many, many guys on that roster who is. That wraps up the Northwest Division. If you missed our thoughts on the Jazz and Thunder, be sure to go back in the podcast feed and find that. We've just given you the tastiest takes you can imagine on the Timberwolves, Blazers, and Nuggets. And if you disagree with any of them, again, you can find us or the show on Twitter. And if you already have rated, reviewed, and subscribed to the show, we encourage you to invite your friends and family to do that. If you haven't done it, of course, you need to do it yourself. And until next time, we leave you with the shout out to Benno Udry and Kyle Anderson.